Session 78, August 10, 1964. Reading from the Early Sessions, Book 2 of the Seth Material. Good evening, Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth. We will cover a variety of subjects this evening, perhaps beginning with a short bit of material concerning energy in general. No system is a closed system. The framework of all systems is basically infinite. Any appearance of enclosure is the result of camouflage distortions, quite necessary within a given system so that the organisms within it can focus their main attentions to the problems within a particular system. Rob notes, recently Jane had been reading an essay in which entropy, the mathematical measure of unavailable energy in a thermodynamic system, was discussed. The author of the book postulated closed systems. Yesterday Jane had remarked to me that she did not think Seth would agree and might have something to say on this, although she did not know when. Seth, since the outer senses, or their equivalent, are the main perceptors of camouflage constructions, then the outer senses and the physical apparatus, or its equivalent, will eventually perceive its particular system as a closed one. The outer senses perceive only certain given distinctions within an open, infinite system, and these distinctions therefore become the apparent boundaries of the system. A closed system is, in other words, the result of the limitations of the outward senses, whose nature it is to distinguish as a meaningful reality only one portion of an open, infinite system. The distinctions formed by the outer senses therefore actually limit perception as a whole, while immersing it into a small but vivid, seemingly enclosed radius of reality. When conceptual thought develops far enough, then it is imagined that all energy originates from what seems to be a closed system, and this misconception then colors all deductions made concerning the nature of energy itself. I repeat that no system, either microscopic or cosmic in size, is ever a closed system. No closed system exists. I will not at this time discuss the deeper issue of one infinite and open system, although this is reality which has indeed theoretically no limitations. Energy completely and constantly does renew itself. This may be a poor analogy. However, imagine a small room, a very small room, into which a light ping-pong ball has been flung with great force so that it bounces back and forth against the narrow walls. From within the room, inhabitants watching would be able, through mathematical deductions, to deduce exactly how long the ball would keep its continuous bouncing activities, and what rate the motion of the ball would lessen, and at what future time the motion would cease entirely. This would represent a closed system. The calculations would have to be based upon the supposition that the original system somehow had its original within the room itself. Imagine now that our inhabitants have been hypothesized into believing that they are in a closed room. Their attention is completely focused within the imaginary room, and with the result that all their concepts are based upon that belief. This is the case as far as the idea of a closed system is concerned. All so-called closed systems are caused by limiting a perception, a narrowing down or distinction, a subconscious agreement that the props are real and that boundaries exist. Conversely, the boundaries do exist when they are thought to exist. A cell is not a closed system. An egg, despite all appearances, is not a closed system. A skull is not a closed system. I will now suggest a brief break. The structure of reality, including all physical phenomena, is composed of mental energy, expanding in terms of psychological value fulfillment. In this sort of reality, there can be no closed systems. Mental energy, indeed, is an attribute of personality, but personality survives the physical frame as it existed before the physical frame, and indeed created the physical frame. You can see, therefore, how unimaginative and basically unworkable the idea of a closed system is. A closed system as a concept is also closely intertwined and dependent upon the distortive idea of time as continuity and the resultant cause and effect premise, which we have already considered earlier. One distortion leads to another. You will learn much more as we continue. An idea that cannot be scientifically observed in any of your laboratories definitely exists. An idea is hardly a closed system, but the reality of an idea, its growth and potential, comes much closer to a description of the characteristics of the universe than any current theory. An idea contains in itself an energy that you cannot presently distinguish or measure, an energy transformed into a form unperceived by the outer senses. There is no such thing basically as diminishing energy. This again is the result of a concept of a closed system. Psychologically, vitality is a transformation of energy, again into terms not recognizable by the outer senses. There are literally countless such manifestations of energy with which the outer senses are not familiar. The inner senses, to the contrary, are well aware of these manifestations and of the existence of an open infinite system within which they only are equipped to function. As individual reliance upon the outer senses develops, the personality to a large degree relies upon them and gradually loses the habit of relying upon the more familiar inner senses utilized mainly in infancy and childhood. This is usually a matter of practicality, yet there are those who continue stubbornly this older and basic reliance upon the inner senses, and these individuals utilize the realization of an open system. You are doing so now. Rupert is doing so now. Your lack of success lately with psychological time has been to a large measure caused by too great a conscious concentration upon the task. An emotional acceptance, distasteful as this may seem to Rupert, is the answer here. And again, a sensual immersion in the spacious present and in nature will refresh you here. The ego and the outer senses reinforce the belief in a closed system and therefore close it. The inner senses, when the physical body is relaxed, will carry you through the imaginary boundaries. But a conscious focus upon the boundaries to be passed through will tend to reinforce them. Concentrate upon the goal rather than the means of attaining it, and you will attain it. The results, when they are received, will appear spontaneous. To say I am weightless, as Rupert does, simply reinforces the idea of bulk and should be discarded. Your vacation will help, and you should really be carefree and relax if possible as children do. You may know that immense immersion into any particular activity results in a momentary loss, or seeming loss, of ego identity, in that the activity and the personality become one. Rupert becomes his poem during such occasions, and you become your painting. I suggest your break. In such a state, the personality is free from the limitations of a closed system concept. Identity is not really lost, though you may seem to forget yourselves, but the props of identity are lost. It is in this same sort of state that the most significant and beneficial inner sense experiments take place. You have both experienced such states, both in your work and with your psychological time episodes. You do not know precisely, in a conscious manner, how to achieve this state when you are working. It seems to just seize you and disappear. You cannot will it to occur. By avoiding distractions, you have often, in your work, given it duration. You do not fear such a seeming loss of identity when it involves an immersion of self in idea. You should not fear it either in psychological time experiments. While it does appear spontaneously, a good deal of conditioning and expectation is behind it, and your subconscious mind brings it forth. A somewhat similar loss of the props can also be achieved by partial immersion in an idea with which you are already familiar as a stepping stone. And this is really what contemplation is. The idea should be an abstract philosophical concept. This at least can be done by initial conscious intent. Contemplation of an abstract nature often leads further into valid psychic experience. You may try this for a change of pace. There must always be a balance between necessary conditioning, ritual, and habit, and spontaneity, freedom, and what we will call instantaneous psychic relaxations. Conditioning, therefore, must also be enlivened, and intuition will help you here. Your physical nature is, as I have told you, an approximation and materialization of inner reality on a physical level. Therefore, such simple activities as walking in the rain, lying upon grass, walking in windy weather, all represent gateways to psychic experience. I am not minimizing the necessity or power of intellect, but any activity in which the individual momentarily forgets the props of identity and immerses himself, such an activity allows him to dispense with the practical limitations inherent in a closed system and it refreshes his psychic ability. Indeed, your own moments of so-called inspiration in your work will be seen to follow such periods of immersion from which the subconscious then acquires its inspiration. Any purposes you would like to achieve should be mentioned to the subconscious before such periods of sensuous immersion or contemplation, and then forgotten on a conscious level. Too great a conscious focus upon these purposes gives a negative reaction of doubt and anxiety. I am not saying that you should not be at all consciously concerned with your purposes. A reminder to the subconscious as to your purposes, whether they are psychic or practical, will be most helpful before immersion, such as a walk and so forth. Now, sensual immersion implies dropping momentarily the barriers between the ego and what the ego is enjoying. This should be simple enough to follow, and the information given this evening will be of much value. The spontaneity of psychic experience cannot be stressed too strongly, and you will find it again following these directions I have given you. They represent the second step, as the initial experiments in psychological time represented the first. They should be taken up again and altered with the above directions according to your development. I suggest your break, or because I have been lenient lately, you may end the session if you prefer. Rob, no. Break at 10:35. Seth, this is one of the main reasons why I suggested, as a rule, at least one day, if not two, a month spent away from the familiar apartment props and in short trips. The details are not necessary and need not cost much expense. If a car were not available, even long walks through various parts of town, with, say, lunch in various strange dining places, would do. Traveling itself, with the change of environment and with the right attitude, tends to ease and facilitate psychic transformations. If traveling is carried out also with the immersion into enjoyment of which I have spoken, then the benefits are twofold. Rupert should not work less at his writing than 4 hours daily, and when possible, perhaps a few hours over the weekend. You should attempt also 4 hours a day. Subconsciously, everything you do adds to experience that you will use in your work. This has been an excellent session. Nevertheless, even the vacation from me will do you good. My most fond friends, I bid you a pleasant good evening. Rob, good night, Seth. Seth, spontaneous attempts, rather spontaneous sessions on your own, will be beneficial if they are not overdone. I will not say more on this evening. Rob, notes end at 10:56. Jane was dissociated as usual. My writing hand felt no fatigue.